Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
A bill to keep mass killing evidence locked away from public and possibly even media scrutiny is moving through the Florida legislature.
We looked at 11 ways to Sunday how to write this to make it easier on the media to get access, and this was the best we could do.
The battle between local and state government authority continues. Today, Florida mayors made their case at the Capitol.
And we as the legislature ought to respect and trust our locals to make decisions that are in the best interest of their constituents.
We'll also dive into the debate over whether immigrant students should have better access to financial aid and should your DNA information be treated as confidentially as your other medical records. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's day 3 in week 4 of the 2019 Florida legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. A bill exempting recordings of mass shootings from the public record cleared the Senate today. Sean Mulcahy reports the House version is headed to that chamber's floor.
A controversial measure following last year's Parkland massacre, it received unanimous support from the senators. The bill would exempt any recording or depiction of a violent act where at least three people, not including the perpetrator, are killed. It would also apply retroactively. The bill's sponsor, Republican Senator Tom Lee, says it's needed to protect survivors and victims' families. He says victims shouldn't continue to be subjected to emotional trauma that could be brought by such photos and videos.
I'm always suspect of public records exemptions, particularly when they potentially touch on operations of government and the ability of the public to review those operations to make sure that folks are held accountable.
That's Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley. He says the bill balances a difficult situation.
Senator Lee, President Lee, in this situation has completely lived up to our obligations under the Constitution. He's articulated very clearly what the public necessity is, and he has worked very diligently with everyone to make sure that it is as narrowly tailored as possible to achieve the goal.
The state constitution requires public record exemptions be as narrow as possible, and lawmakers must prove there's a need for it. Free speech advocates like the First Amendment Foundation have raised concerns over the public's ability to hold officials accountable. First Amendment Foundation President Barbara Peterson says that concern isn't about publishing graphic photos or videos.
They want to see what happened, how law enforcement responded. And I believe that the way this bill has been narrowed and amended, it would allow us that oversight.
Public officials who are involved in acts of mass violence or who are acting within the scope of their job would not be included in the exemption. Lee says he worked with Peterson to scale back exemptions and ensure it'll pass constitutional muster. And he's confident it'll hold up against any legal challenges.
But to the extent that someone feels like things are being walled off by this legislation, that the media needs to have access, there will still be that ability to go to court. We looked at 11 ways to Sunday how to write this to make it easier on the media to get access, and this was the best we could do.
Public records uncovered by the Sun Sentinel after the 2018 Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting found officers remained outside the school while the shooting was going on. This led to the creation of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Commission and a number of measures proposed in the legislature this year. Despite the objections, the bill sailed through all three of its committee stops before getting full support from the state senators. The House version of the bill is waiting to be heard by that chamber's floor. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
The Florida League of Mayors brought municipality heads to the Capitol today to oppose preemption bills this legislative session. Ryan Daly reports about 30 mayors also met with Attorney General Ashley Moody to discuss Florida's mental health system.
Democratic Senator Bobby Powell stood alongside mayors from around the state as he denounced legislation that takes away local control.
There's been legislation aimed at restricting local government's ability to enforce inclusionary housing, ban plastic straws, and even regulate vegetable gardens.
Powell says his colleagues in the Capitol should be protecting mayors' decision-making power.
The concept of home rule has been established in our state constitution for decades, and we as the legislature ought to respect and trust our locals to make decisions that are in the best interest of their constituents.
Matthew Surrency is mayor of the city of Hawthorne.
There have been more than this year alone 1,500 general bills filed, and we at the municipal level are following more than 600, and nearly 50 of those contain preemptions.
Surrency used the example of one bill on the issue of short-term rentals.
This is a local zoning issue. Each of our communities can decide how short-term rentals fit within our communities. We're not necessarily for them or against them, but we want the opportunity to work with the short-term rentals and decide where they go and how they fit in our communities.
And Capital City Mayor John Daly, like his peers, says a one-size-fits-all model is not one that works.
We have 412 different municipalities, and we all have different personalities. To assume what's good for Tallahassee is good for Gainesville or St. Pete or Miami, we have to have the ability to set local ordinance on the local level because we are the government closest to the people.
Mayors also joined State Attorney General Ashley Moody to discuss Florida's mental health system. Among the topics Moody brought up was Florida's worsening opioid crisis.
And when I started and decided to resign as a judge, we were losing 14 people a day in Florida to this crisis. And from the moment, from the time it's taken me to go from entering this race until now standing in front of you as the 38th Attorney General, we now lose 17 people a day.
Moody says local leaders must play a role if the state is going to see some of those numbers drop.
And I knew there is no way we're going to start making progress on this unless we had a coordinated, strategic, data-proven method of attacking each and every county in this state. And we did not have a coordinated effort.
Moody says she has put together a group of experts that recommends best practices for city and county leaders when directing resources. She feels Florida is doing poorly in handling mental health when it intersects with the criminal justice system.
As a judge, I also sat many times and saw people come in front of me with mental health issues that needed a doctor more than they needed a judge.
Grover Robinson is mayor of Pensacola and a former county commissioner in Escambia County.
Certainly at the county, we saw that when we ran a jail, and we, as I jokingly, but it's fairly serious in the sense that we felt we were the largest mental health provider in the community at a jail, and I think that's absolutely the wrongest place to have to do it.
Robinson is asking the Florida legislature to look at ways to inject more funding for mental health, which he says has a trickle-down effect.
It's been hard for us to get the state of Florida to understand that they need to put more money into this. This is an area that will impact all of our things. It impacts our corrections, it impacts health, it impacts our ability to education, economic opportunities. All of these things are impacted by this.
Robinson adds homelessness and substance addiction are both problems plaguing Florida cities, which both tie in to mental health.
I think we could be much better in the state of Florida if our legislature was serious about mental health funding.
I'm Ryan Daly.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida's chief financial officer wants DNA testing companies to treat that genetic information as a medical record, meaning it shouldn't be shared with just anyone.
To me, this is just a whole different type of a concern where your DNA without proper disclosure can be used and exploited.
When seconds save lives, there's a push in the legislature to improve the speed of first responders' responses.
And so I support this bill wholeheartedly. It increases communication among all first responders.
And lawmakers say they're not happy with the results of the most recent Constitution Revision Commission.
As I've said before, this is kind of like the Pandora's box of policy. We don't really know what's going to come out of these commissions. It only meets once every 20 years.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Over the years, DNA testing companies have been becoming more and more popular. One such firm is Family Tree DNA. It offered its customers a chance to discover their heritage and possibly find living relatives after taking a DNA test. But then, without client consent, the company shared genetic data with the FBI. And some other DNA testing companies have shared unauthorized client info with pharmaceutical companies. Florida's chief financial officer, Jimmy Petronas, thinks that's wrong. He thinks DNA should be treated like a medical record, and he shared his concerns with Blaze Ganey.
I'm here with CFO Jimmy Petronas, and a couple of weeks ago, I saw you tweet out in frustration about how certain companies are using genetic information that they are gathered from, you know, if I want to find out my lineage, maybe I may send off my DNA to a certain company, but they are apparently selling that information. Now, there is bills that would stop that. And can you speak on those?
Sure. So, and Blaze, thank you for bringing this to light with your audience. Look, DNA contains health data. And to me, ultimately, as I'm very concerned about identity theft when it comes to individuals being taken advantage of, to me, this is just a whole different type of a concern where your DNA without proper disclosure can be used and exploited. And then, oh, by the way, at some point later in the future, say there is a data breach, just like we had it at Uber or Target or Equifax or Starbucks, then you ultimately are leaving your genetic code in the hands of God knows who is ultimately the owner of it. So I think informed disclosure, you know, and you know, ultimately it'd be great to have just a pure opt out when somebody decides to take advantage of one of these ancestry related, business models.
Definitely. And what are some of the things these companies are using the information for? Now, I've seen the bills say things like, insurance companies may use the information to adjust their policies. Is that one of the reasons?
So, well, that's definitely a foot. So over 26 million people have shared DNA with these ancestry related companies. Just recently, there was a deal where a pharmaceutical company actually bought the DNA from one of the larger DNA companies where GlaxoSmithKline and 23andMe had signed a multi-million dollar deal of over $300 million. This right here, this to me is an exploitation that I don't believe the consumer ever signed a disclosure to see happen. And then ultimately, what is done with that DNA, can it ultimately be used as some type of a marker or tracker to potentially eliminate somebody's ability to be able to get insurance? So it's very concerning to me because at the end of the day, if they aren't taking care of what they should be taking care of, you know, nobody would ever think Target would have a data breach. Nobody would ever think that Starbucks or Equifax of all would have a data breach, but they happen. Look, so this is no different. I feel like this is could be the worst type of data breach if one of these companies were to have some type of exploitation or exposure to some nefarious efforts.
Definitely. In both chambers, there are bills moving forward that would prevent these things from happening. Have you spoken with lawmakers to see if this is at the forefront for them in this session?
Yeah, absolutely. So Senator Bean and Representative Williamson both have bills filed that would prevent insurance companies from considering your genetic information when setting rates or denying policies. You know, the last time I bought a life insurance policy, the insurance company, at their expense, paid for a nurse practitioner to come pay a visit, take my resting heart rate, do a blood test, do all of these different type of health diagnosis. Want to know if I was, a smoker or did I ever consume alcohol or any of that. So all that goes into their risk model when it comes to setting the rates. I think that crossing into this whole DNA world with it, in these companies actually sharing and selling the information back, is a whole different type of exploitation that I just can't support or condone. I appreciate the legislature turning up the volume on this as we try to inform our citizens of how we are looking out for them, but how important it is that we demand that the industry create some type of informed consent system.
Definitely, and sometimes you see a lot of issues take a while to actually get moved through legislature. And we could talk about AOB if we were talking about something that takes a while to move through. But do you think that this is something that will need to be tackled in more than one session, or do you think this one bill should clear up what's going on?
Well, great point. I think this is a great start. The marketing that is being used by these DNA companies, I think they're preying on these wonderful reuniting of family stories, which brings a certain level of comfort of putting, you know, family members together that they've never met. So they build this very warm, heart-touching narrative. But what you don't really see is, all right, now that we've got, you know, 26 million individuals' DNA, how can I go and profit from it? That's not above board. That's pretty, in my opinion, pretty unethical.
I think I tend to agree with something like that. Thank you so much for speaking about this and getting it out in the forefront so that constituents in this area can know about it.
Well, and look, Blaze, look, you're nobody probably says this to you very often, but you're a public servant also. And look, this is what we're doing. We're taking care of the citizens of the state of Florida. And look, I'm not telling anybody, don't go find out who your great, 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 great grandmother was or where she was from. I think it's all fine and well, but you got to create some disclosure, some transparency, and some ability to allow, once you actually perform one of these DNA tests, that you have rights to protect your personal data. It could be the worst type of identity theft ever.
Definitely. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
All right, Blaze. Take care, buddy.
All right, you too.
That's Blaze Ganey speaking with Florida Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Petronis. Some college students are pushing Florida lawmakers to allow immigrant students access to state financial aid. We get that story from Gabrielle Bolden.
The Florida Latinx Hispanic Union wants state legislators to support two bills which would give state financial aid to students who have been granted deferred action for childhood arrivals and temporary protected status. Currently, DACA and TPS students are unable to receive both federal and state financial aid. Co-sponsor of the bill, Democratic Representative Ventrice Driscoll, says post-secondary schooling is too expensive and her bill will allow more opportunities.
The bill would provide DACA and TPS recipients with the opportunity to be classified as Florida residents for the purpose of receiving financial aid awards based upon their merit. Specifically, it will help expand the Florida Bright Futures Scholarship to qualifying, well-deserving dreamers across the state, in order to help them bear some of the costs incurred with attending college.
In 2014, a measure allowing undocumented students to qualify for in-state tuition was passed. The Florida Immigration Coalition's Thomas Kennedy says more can be done.
When we give these students and other students across the state the ability to become the best that they can be, to pursue their dreams, to achieve their immigrant dreams, the American dream, we all benefit from it.
Even though Florida allows in-state tuition, immigrant students are unable to claim Florida Bright Futures. Florida Latinx Hispanic Union Vice President Mariana Castro says that limits how far students can go with their education.
Sometimes takes less classes or have to pull out crazy private loans. I mean, if I ever need money, I can't even go to a bank and get a loan because as DACA recipients, we're not able to do so.
Representative Driscoll says the financial aid money is not dependent on the federal government.
We actually have the authority over our state and how we're going to spend our state dollars. So if the legislature determined that this was a priority, we absolutely have the authority to do that.
So far, none of the proposals have received a hearing. I'm Gabrielle Bolden.
The Florida legislature is moving forward with a bill that aims to make first responders more efficient. Casey Chapter tells us more.
Under the bill, 911 calls could be transferred between locations across the state. And all public safety answering points should have the ability to communicate with first responders by radio. The Florida Police Chief Association's Gary Hester says each county will be responsible for implementing the new policy.
This would give us the ability to come up with a local solution to expedite the response and to do it at little or no cost, as opposed to mandating that all consoles have to be able to communicate with each other. So we're going to leave that up to local control. We feel that they can come up with the best plan that meets their communities and ensure that we have a rapid response to any future tragedies if we happen to have them.
The association is backing Democratic Representative Bobby Dubose's bill. He says people have been hung up on when a dispatcher attempts to transfer them. Republican Representative Mike Caruso says this happened to him when his son was injured while on vacation.
Put him in my car and drove to the hospital down at the bottom of the mountain, whereupon about 15 minutes later I got a call and everybody was at the location where I had been. This bill will save lives because it will save seconds and minutes for fire rescue and for first responders.
But there are concerns regarding how local citizens will be affected. Richard Pinsky, a lobbyist who represents emergency dispatchers, says that funding may be a concern.
Yes, we appreciate the local control. However, funding is the issue, whether it's state mandated or it's going to be shifted to the locals. The county commissions have been restricting budgets on both law enforcement and fire rescue and incrementally increases. There has to be some address to the funding to get this done.
I'm Casey Chapter.
Tomorrow is this week's last full day of Capitol activity, as lawmakers typically take off Friday afternoon for the weekend. Let's check in with Gina Jordan.
Here's what's coming up tomorrow in the Florida legislature. A bill to impose term limits on local school board members gets its final committee hearing in the House. It proposes an amendment to the Florida Constitution for voters to consider, limiting school board members to 8 consecutive years in office. Public and private schools would have to require students to have a vaccine record on file with the state's electronic immunization registry. 2 committees will consider bills relating to prescription drugs. One would allow users to have their prescriptions imported from Canada. The other would help protect the identity of patients who have records in the state's prescription drug monitoring programs. Databases track the prescribing and dispensing of certain controlled medications like opioids. A broad elections bill is designed to prevent problems like the state saw last November. It requires the Secretary of State to provide signature matching training to election supervisors and county canvassing board members. It also extends the deadline for curing defective vote-by-mail ballot signatures to 5 p.m. on the second day after an election. The Senate Appropriations Committee will work on the chamber's budget proposal for the coming fiscal year. And the full chamber will hold a floor session to take up bills that have been approved by all of their assigned committees. That's some of what's happening tomorrow at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, most lawmakers agree something should be done about the Constitution Revision Commission, the group that meets once every 20 years, and can send proposed amendments straight to the ballot for voter approval. But Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers aren't all in agreement when it comes to what should be done.
Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee was a member of the Constitution Revision Commission that met last year.
We tried to explain to the leadership of the commission that we were operating under a partisan environment, unlike 1998, when we had a bipartisan commission, when Dexter Douglas was the chair and Lawton Childs was the governor, and he had his appointees, and that maybe following the rules that we had in 1998 with a bipartisan commission wasn't as healthy under a partisan commission controlled entirely by one party.
But Lee says his concerns were largely ignored. 5 of the amendments placed on the November ballot asked voters to decide about more than one subject, with a single yes or no response. Orange Park Republican Senator Rob Bradley has a bill to stop the practice often called bundling.
The bundling of several issues in one constitutional amendment is a terrible way to amend our Constitution. It's unfair to voters who may approve of one issue in the amendment and disapprove of another. This bill ends bundling. Unlike amendments proposed by the legislature or by Citizens Initiative, amendments proposed by the CRC are not required to meet the single subject rule.
Bradley's bill would change that. It's a move Miami Democratic Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez applauded as Bradley's bill came up for a floor vote.
When our revision commissions meet, they ought to be limited to single subject. If they're not, what we saw in the 2018 election is likely to repeat it, which is that voters get robbed of the ability to weigh in on what should and shouldn't be in our Constitution because of bundling.
Bundling isn't the only concern lawmakers have about the commission. Some say the body has become too political. Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley says the commission is supposed to focus on the structure of the Constitution, not policy.
No. We turned into a situation where we have a mini unelected legislature just running a bunch of bills on policy and budget.
Baxley wants to raise the threshold for proposed amendments to pass. Right now, 60% of voters must agree with a proposal before it becomes part of the state constitution. Baxley would increase that to a two-thirds majority, requiring approval for any proposed amendment to pass from 66 2/3% of voters. And other lawmakers question whether the Constitution Revision Commission should meet at all. St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis is behind that bill. He says the commission simply doesn't make sense to him.
As I've said before, this is kind of like the Pandora's box of policy. We don't really know what's going to come out of these commissions. It only meets once every 20 years. It still maintains the two provisions that we allow for Constitution to be adjusted, either by the legislature by 3/5 or by the petition of the people. So I think that's, you know, essentially 19 out of 20 years the way that it works, and then the 20th year there's this process by which 37 unelected people get to propose amendments to the Constitution, and we frankly just don't know how it's going to shape out.
If passed by lawmakers, all of those measures would require approval from 60% of voters to change the state's constitution. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Casey Chapter and Gabrielle Bolden. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag.